may be right, I may be crazy, but maybe not. Welcome this Monday to the Morning Edge. I'm Floyd J. Winters, and here is Augie.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. It's time for that good old Patriot Act to... Oops, it's dead. Uh-oh, are they going to get a new version? The Freedom Act. Well, some years ago, at the time of 9/11, I did a poem called Patriot Drums, and I'll read it to you. Patriot drums, drums of war beating loud and long, bada-boom, 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 etc., etc., etc. Patriots standing proud and strong, clapping at the media's latest words of heroes here, of heroes gone, of heroes' screams and heroes' cheers, of heroes live and heroes dead. Drums of war beating loud and long, bada-boom, 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 etc., etc., etc. Rip and tear of that great document for our precious security. The government is you and me. The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, old and frayed. We say we hold them dear. First and Fourth Amendments, their demise may be near. That Patriot Act offers security. Security without liberty ain't security at all. Drums of war and where you stand, bada-boom, 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 etc., etc., etc. And here you have a man in the well of the Senate for all of Sunday evening in the form of Rand Paul speaking about that. And the whole issue, and he is using the filibuster rule in the Senate to do that. And, of course, we have the Hastert rule, which is the majority of the majority. And in both cases, Dennis Hastert now has been somewhat put into question and his credibility is in doubt because of his paying somewhat off for hiding some facts, sort of like the pedophile issue in the Catholic Church, perhaps. Not sure what that is. Floyd, what is your take on the Patriot Act? Now they want to do a Freedom Act to replace it. Where do you come down?
Well, I think that's a wonderful topic, and if you want to share in the topic of the Patriot Act and the NSA and the surveillance, give us a call at 941-745-1490. I want to look a little bit of the background of what's really happening there. The NSA has this huge, massive storage facility in Utah that's something like 1.5 million square feet. Four-story buildings. These buildings are like, there's like eight of them. They're like big schoolhouses, and it is equivalent to 10 city blocks. These are this is a server farm in just the widest, hugest proportions that can store the data. But it's not just the conversations of our phone, and actually they don't really store all the data that we have. What they're storing instead is metadata, and I want to talk about metadata and what that really is. It's this data of data. It's background data, hidden data that you don't really see. It is maybe it's not the actual conversation.
I understand what that is that the length of time the phone call takes place, mostly.
That's part of it. It's the phone number, when the call took place, who it went to, where it came from. So it's the data behind it. For instance, on the internet, there's metadata behind the scenes that has information about key phrases, but also has information, the description of the website, which you may not see any other place, but when you do a Google search, you'll see the description of this metadata, behind-the-scenes data, come up. And there's metadata...
The notion people have, Floyd, is that someone's listening to your phone call, listening to your conversation. What you're saying is that they can go back and recoup it and decide what's interesting, what isn't interesting, and so forth.
Well, allegedly, they can't get the whole conversation. They can just get who you were calling, when you were calling, from what number you were calling, and information. Then if they feel that there's something going on that threatens our security or if there's against the law, they can go to a special court that they can go to. And the court's a foreign intelligence surveillance court. And the NSA and the Department
FISA court, right?
The NSA and the Department... I don't know why it's FISA.
FISA
because,
Act.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the NSA and the Department of Justice...
Does they have a warrant?
Can get a warrant, allegedly.
I mean, under the
apparently
Fourth Amendment, you're supposed to get a warrant. You're supposed to be safe in your possessions and in your house.
And that's what I want to discuss.
I mean, isn't your phone part of your house, where you live, where you function, your castle, if you will.
Your phone, your email, your text messages.
So is Rand Paul going to benefit from this politically?
And so Rand Paul wants to do away with provisions of the Patriot Act that allow these searches, which really can be interpreted as being opposed to our Fourth Amendment, which protects us from unreasonable searches without warrant.
Isn't this thing already in place? AT&T and the other servers out there provide records, transcripts, whatever, of whatever phone comes from whatever phoning comes from whatever source, whatever cell, whatever.
Yeah, it's already out there by your telephone providers, your internet
so
service
don't
providers.
Have protection anyway.
And what happens is the NSA or the Department of Justice can go on and they can force AT&T or they can force Time Warner
That's
to
under
turn
a
over.
Though, isn't it?
Pardon?
Isn't that under a warrant?
And it's supposed to be under a warrant. But it turns out that sometimes you just find out about your ex-girlfriend or your ex-wife or your current wife to find out what they're doing. And there's been a number of cases where this has been abused. This is abused by local police stations. This is abused by federal authorities.
Or the lawyer that somebody is hired for a divorce action.
Yeah, and it will happen to see if they can trace it.
But does that really do any good? Because so many cases in those situations, the way the laws are written in divorce in no-fault states such as Florida, does it really mean much?
Well, there's a bunch of things. Does it mean much? In Florida, it's a no-fault state, so if you happen to have records of your wife to show that she's been communicating behind the scenes with her boyfriend, and you can see where she was in track, or my AT&T Android smartphone gives me the ability to trace the text messages of my wife or the whereabouts of my wife in a GPS. Now, actually, I'm a sailor. I teach sailing, small sailboat sailing, and I enjoy doing this. And I simply showed her how to track my whereabouts so she can know at all times where I am. She can know I got back home safely, and she can check and see. And it's a matter of safety. About 6 years ago, there was a woman from Venice. Her father was, I think, the chief of police. She was kidnapped, stuffed in the trunk of a car. She tried to communicate from a sailboat from where she was, but
her cell phone
where she was. Mm-hmm. And because of the legality of actually tracing someone's cell phone without having the authority to do it, they weren't able to get her, and she ended up getting murdered. So I asked I think it was the chief of police's daughter. I know that he was a major.
Daughter, said it was his wife.
I'm sorry. Well, it was a combination: one person's wife, one person's daughter. Mm-hmm. But they were I think they were both involved with the police department. I think it was Venice. I forget her exact name. But the fact is, they knew she had been kidnapped. They knew she was in trunk of this car.
But you're making the case that this is a good thing.
And yes, I want to talk about that. I think it's really an important issue. There's a couple issues that have come up this past week.
But you snoop, I snoop, we all snoop, everybody.
But is it snooping to know that your wife is safe, to know what she may have disappeared to or something like that? There have been numerous cases that have happened in our county, in our area, where people have been kidnapped, and where do they go to? And they ended up dead. And if you have their cell phone records, and you can see this. So I'm going to present to the listening audience, do we want to have this ability for our protection, for our safety?
Are you afraid of your neighbor, or your family members, whatever?
Well, in this case, I'm letting my wife know this is where I am. If somehow I don't come back, if I'm out at sea and I've had a busted. I went out this past weekend, and the boom on the boat that we were on snapped. We were able to get back. We sailed back, even with a broken boom. We were able to rig things up. But I've gone out sailing a lot of times. Last year, I was out 90 times sailing. And in the process, I've had a sail rip. I've had an engine go out. And these aren't my boats. These are just boats I'm with different individuals. I've had run out of gas because the sail ripped. And I had the boom break. I've had a rudder break. I've been with different individuals, helping to teach them and stuff like that. And sailing's an adventure. So if something happened, my wife now can say, well, he's still out at on the Tampa Bay or something like that. If the weather becomes bad, she can call and see if I'm safe or send the Coast Guard out or something like that. The same thing if my wife hasn't come back from where she's supposed to be, I can check and see where she is or I can call her. It's a matter, in my case, I feel it's safety. Am I snooping on my wife? or am I trying to protect my wife? Is she trying to protect me or to rescue me? So the same thing happens for the track and the metadata. Is the country trying to protect us and snoop on us, or are they trying to basically get our information, find out?
Was there any uprising in the public when the Patriot Act was formed?
And that's the issue. Most Americans support the Patriot Act and the things that
they really know what they're supporting.
And the Patriot Act was jammed through Congress in just a matter of days. It was already pre-written.
And does the public care?
Yeah.
That's the issue.
And here's the situation Rand Paul said, and I respect, he's a Republican candidate on the other side of the sense because Augie and I are Democrats.
Well, but, actually, I'm an independent.
And I feel I'm a very moderate Democrat, and so I'll have a lot of disagreements with my fellow members of the party. But at the same token, Rand Paul says, do we really have freedom if we surrender our freedom? Are we really protecting ourselves if we give up this particular freedom, our Fourth Amendment right to protect our house from being searched and warrantless searches? And he's got a good point, but at the same token, do I care if the federal government has access to every single one of my emails, if they have access to every one of my phone calls?
Well, I would say, in truth, since we know our server collects this stuff, there's no reason to think that a warrant can't be served upon the server to reveal all of that. So why do we need a special law?
Well, and that's for the point that Rand Paul's making, because, again, right now, I can go on. If say my wife and I have the same cell phone provider and I'm paying for her cell phone, mm-hmm. We're the same provider, I can log on to my AT&T.net and check the GPS history for free and check the text messages for free. I can't see the actual text of the text messages, but I can see when the text message was sent and where it was sent and who it was sent to.
I'm just a little put off by, I respect your concerns, and I respect the public's concerns. I just don't think they're concerned, number one. Number two, I really think that what's more concerning to me is how we conduct our government's business. And to his credit, Rand Paul is opposed to this. He's one of the few people in the political sphere who's demonstrated this concern. So fine. And he's alerting the public to the nature of the concerns. But that's been going on. Now, when the Patriot Act came into effect after 05. So, or no, after 01.
No,
excuse
yeah.
me, after 01.
Yes.
And that's when I did my poem about the thing that the people should be concerned about. And, you know, I've read the poem on this show a couple of times, and when Bud Beck ran the board here years ago, I did it for his show. So that's how far back this goes.
And it was just published?
Oh, no, it was published at the time.
Okay.
Yeah, it was published. University of South Florida Graduate Press published this. But anyhow, the long and the short of it, the concern issues, I remember people calling in on Bud Beck's show about it and what's going to happen and hairs on fire and all that sort of thing. I'm more concerned about things like this Dennis Hastert thing and the filibuster rule that allows people to shut down the government in the Senate, in the Congress, and the Hastert rule. Do you know what the Hastert rule is about, Floyd?
Yeah, I guess we're going to change topics.
Well, it's not so changed because it goes. We have a caller, so we'll see what the caller thinks anyway. But the Hastert rule is about the majority of the majority. And it goes to the point of what is allowed to be voted upon on the floor of the Senate, and of the House, excuse me, because Hastert was the head of the House at the time. So do we have a caller?
I didn't hear any kind of audible sound from the caller, so we're going to let him go.
Silence, so
yeah, well,
out.
No, there was something in the background, but I'm going to...
Some noise, okay. Or was it? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the Hastert rule, the criticism of the Hastert rule. For those of you who don't know what the Hastert rule is, Dennis Hastert now has been brought out in the open for spending almost $2 million to pay somebody to be quiet about a relationship they had in high school, and he was a coach of the, I think, swimming team. Way back.
A wrestling team,
was that what it was? Yeah, thank you. Critics of the Hastert rule say it's too rigid and limits...
What is the Hastert rule?
Well, it's the majority of the majority. In other words, you can have people wanting something on the floor of the House, and unless the party in power is in the position of agreeing to letting you do it, nothing happens. So you could have there's 535 people in the Congress, and you're allowed to have, if that the House majority says, well, if there's not a majority of Republicans that are going to agree to this, this bill is not going to come up. So in other words, if you have 150 Republicans wanting it and 90 or so Democrats, doesn't matter. If the majority of that party is not there, the House leader, in the case of Hastert, who was a majority leader for the House at the time, says, no, we're not going to let that come forward. Doesn't matter what the representatives of the public want, party by party, by partisanship or whatever. No. And that's where he created that, and he demanded that, and that's where a large reason why our government is shut down. So we have a caller?
Yes, we have a caller. Actually, she wants to talk about your poem. Caller, you're live on the Edge. Welcome to the Morning Edge.
Thank you. This is Pat, and I just want to compliment the poem. It's very apropos. And I'm glad the Patriot Act did die, but they will come back with something great again. But since the Patriot Act initially was only written, I think, by a few justice people and the president, had nothing to, it wasn't even really written by Congress. It was one of those crisis things where the Congress had to approve it for some and then lose in 2 or 3 hours. And it's one of those things like the Affordable Care Act, where, well, we'll pass it first and then read it later, because that's what they did with that. However, I agree with you, Troy, that it's good to have the information on your cell phone, because it's very helpful to be able to trace even what you called and when you called it, or your children, or whoever's on your telephone system. So you can get when the texts were made and who to, and whether they were made by a person or they were received by a person. But if you're in a divorce situation, you can subpoena the actual text messages.
Well, I don't know if you can in Florida because it's a no-fault rule, and if your wife or your husband's having an affair, it's irrelevant in divorce proceedings. It's unfortunate in Florida that your wife or husband can have an affair, can go out and cheat on you, then come back and end up, even if she maybe say she never worked at all, she could end up taking half of your house, give it to her and her boyfriend. They can live there. You can't bring up the fact that she's been cheating on you. You can't bring up the fact that you have those records showing that she's been meeting with him behind the scenes after all this time. As a no-fault state, it makes divorce a little bit easier and less ugly, but at the same token, it does lead to the situation where cheating, I mean, just think about the fact, you can be a husband working for 20 years, your wife has been cheating on you, she decides she sees a younger man, she wants to divorce you, she can take half of all the money you've made, half of all the marital income, half of your house, and now that when she takes it, she can move her boyfriend into your house and you can't even introduce any of that to the court. So it's nice to know your house, your wife is safe. Let me add, when my granddaughter went to school, she went to a charter school where she had to, Manatee School of the Arts, and she went out to the Manatee School of the Arts, and she was on a bus. The first day of school, she gets on that bus, and the bus driver says, "What's your bus stop street?" Well, she wasn't sure. She knew what her address was, but she didn't know a bus stop street. So the doggone damn bus driver kicked her off the bus and says, "You're not going to get on this bus because you don't know your bus stop street." Kicked my granddaughter off, who's in seventh grade, kicks her off the bus and says, "You don't know your bus stop street." And as a consequence, she's stranded there at the school, and I was supposed to pick her up, and the parents were supposed to pick her up, meet her at the bus stop, and we're scared. Where is she at? The bus has come by. There's no granddaughter. I made sure she had a cell phone on her that next week. Now, she's my granddaughter. I gave my son. I said, "Here's the money. You buy the cell phone. You pay for the bill afterwards." It's a matter of safety. It's a matter of safety. Maybe she got dropped off at the wrong street. Maybe you don't know what happened. And for the husband, the wife, the husband's out on the water, the wife who's out doesn't come home in the evening, or the granddaughter who doesn't come home from school, it's a matter of safety. It's not a matter of trying to be snooping. But anyway, Pat, what else do you want to add to the conversation?
I think when it is limited to the people who actually own the phone, that's one thing. But when the NSA is, and I totally believe that they're just monitoring the calls in general. I mean, when they were made, who they were made to, especially ones to the Middle East that are, you know, back and forth. So I'm not so concerned about that aspect of it. They only go into the details, just like anybody else would, if there's a reason to. I mean, you look and you say, this has been going on, and this is getting suspicious. So then you check the details, just like you would on your cell phone.
Well, Pat, thank you for your call. I'm going to let you go because the connection's not very good, and our listeners are going to have a hard time hearing you. But let me add to it. I want to thank you for your call very much. Let me add to that, Augie. The months after 9/11, at the State College of Florida, we had a general who was based in Washington near the Pentagon when the Pentagon was hit by one of those planes, and he was in charge of the surveillance. And it was amazing. He was very frustrated. He says, we weren't allowed to coordinate the NSA, the FBI, the DOJ, the Department of Justice, the CIA, because of the different things. They all had their own particular area of surveillance, and they weren't coordinated. And he says, I want to show you what happened when we put these pieces of information together, these metadata pieces of information. And he had the 19 hijackers, and he had a diagram. He showed the whole entire faculty of the college up there. It was interesting watching all these individuals. He says, this guy was communicating here, this guy was communicating there, and he showed this huge solid spider web, and you can see all the connections. And he says, this is so obvious what was happening. Here they are in Venice taking airplane lessons and not learning how to land the airplanes. Here they are over here collecting money. Here they are over here. They've had all these resources. They moved out early. And I said, this is such an obvious thing. As he put together the elements of what had happened, the CIA had, the DOJ had, the NSA had, the FBI had.
That's the point.
He put all this together. Yeah. He says, this would have been just apparent that this was going to happen. But because we had all these individuals operating separately,
and separately.
Well, they weren't sharing.
We have our information. They have their information. We're the FBI. No, we're the CIA. No, we're the DOJ.
And they weren't sharing the information. As a consequence, they weren't able to put this together.
So let me understand something. We know now that the Arabs, the Bin Ladens, the Saudi family, all those people were flown out with advanced knowledge.
After 9/11, they were flown
prior.
Well, both
2 weeks prior.
But the first plane that was able to take off from U.S. soil after 9/11 was Osama bin Laden's family.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first plane. But yes, they flew out beforehand too. There was a place
which
in Sarasota that was vacated like 2 weeks beforehand. They left the cars, they left all the furnishings and all the stuff. They just left it.
But there's strong knowledge that the government knew about this stuff. And there's even suspicion the White House knew about it.
The 28 pages that Bob Graham,
has. It turned out that they knew all this before. The argument for the Patriot Act goes kind of down the toilet, doesn't it? We already had that. We misused what we already knew. And so is it trustworthy of the government anyway when you have a government that starts a war that's unwarranted and has done all this other stuff?
Now let's talk about that again. What he says, start a war that's unwarranted. This was a preemptive war against Iraq.
Preemptive to say, I did it better than my daddy. And, this whole nonsense that we need to go to war when we're threatened every time. Was that a miscall?
There's no answer there.
No answer, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So if
you want to call, we're going to take a break, but if you want to call and talk about this, and let us know how you feel. Would you feel uncomfortable having your information read by the U.S. government? But we're going to take a break, and I'm going to take this caller offline for a second, and we'll be right back here on the Morning Edge after we hear from this sponsor.
Sarasota is home to a true gift. The Posture Clinic of Sarasota with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients, too.
And we are back at the Morning Edge. We're talking about the Patriot Act. I was referring to the Utah data center the NSA have. It's 10 blocks large. It's like 8 huge school buildings that are 4 stories high. It stores just a ton. It's enough if you were to take a photo on your cell phone and photo after photo and wrap it clear around the earth. It's that kind of data.
And we have a caller, but maybe we'll actually have a caller.
We shall see.
The fear issue is all underneath of this whole business.
Okay, we have a caller. We have Ken on the air.
Morning,
Ken, welcome to the Morning Edge.
Morning, Ken.
You're on, Ken. Right?
Okay. Hey, guys. My concern with this failure to agree on the Patriot Act the issues contained in that act is that it's one more failure of our Congress to govern this country and to keep this country safe. We've seen government shutdowns, the unwillingness to fund the government. Now we have, and nobody disagrees, that data collection and ferreting out terror cells in the United States and lone wolves in operating in the United States with contacts overseas. Nobody argues that those are individuals that we need to find. But yet they can't have a meaningful debate in the public eye. They can't do it in a timely fashion so that their differences are worked out so that
let me interject something.
So that the law is re-implemented in whatever form that it takes before the ability of the government to act shuts down and once again the Congress isn't functioning the way that it should. That's what concerns me, is their inability to act in a timely fashion. In this case, to make America safe, and it's
but it can't,
it's
can't,
disgusting.
Let me add to that point, and that's why I brought up the Hastert rule. Right now, in almost every example of ineffective legislative effort on the part of the Congress, it's been the Hastert rule that's been used to block out any kind of legislative control, whether it's a shutdown of the government or the Patriot Act or whatever. The Hastert rule simply says, unless there's a majority of the majority, we will not let it come to the floor for a vote. Doesn't matter if there's bipartisanship. It's gone. And so here we have people opposed to the Patriot Act early on. It never came to the floor. Hastert was there at the time, and this has been blocked. And this is what's been going on for the last 15 years under Dennis Hastert. This is the guy that's gotten revealed for his malfactoring on the sidelines as a high school wrestling coach.
When was Dennis Hastert the Speaker of the House?
He was there.
When did he leave?
I think he left just prior to Boehner. Actually,
well, how many years ago?
It was in the 1990s.
Okay, yeah. So it's been 15 years.
Right.
In 15 years, certainly, if this was a rule that was unworkable, that caused our government to melt down and not function in the way that it is now, that rule could be changed. It's not a written rule of Congress. It's not in the operating protocols of Congress. This is something that people adopted when they were in the majority, and obviously it really gums up the works in Congress. It could be changed in a moment.
But that's within a party. In other words, if you have the party in control doing it just because that's what they do, then it'll continue. It doesn't matter what the other party does when they come into power. If Nancy Pelosi says that will not be allowed in the future and she's no longer leader, how does she change that?
She could have easily. She could have changed the rules. Unfortunately, Obama and Pelosi did not really work on the majority principle all the time. Again, the majority of the majority, you're talking about if the House has 250 Republicans and 150 of those people are opposed to something, but if you add the Democrats and the Republicans who favor something, you have a majority.
They wouldn't have 250. They would not have a majority. Yeah. You'd have to have more than 250. You'd have 270.
But either way, if you have whatever party's in power,
there's 535 in Congress, so you'd have to have more than half to have the majority of the majority.
But as you have it, it's whatever party's in the majority, even though you have Democrats and Republicans combined that would pass in favor of the bill, whatever party's in power, if the majority of them do not want that to go through, the speakers would say it will not come to the floor. Even if most Americans want it, even if most people in Congress want it, if the majority party has one more person in half, he can keep that from coming to vote. So even if Republican voters split, and it's just disappointing. Pelosi could have changed that rule. Pelosi could have been more.
I think that's the question.
It's not a written rule in Congress.
Right.
This is something that was adopted. It has no standing whatsoever in the rules and protocols of the Congress.
Well, Pelosi uses.
Isn't that true?
I think it's not a. It's not a.
Not a written rule.
Written rule.
Yeah.
It's
okay. So we have for 15 years we've had all this dysfunction in Congress. You know, Americans don't care about all those numbers and the majorities and the minorities and whatever else. What Americans want, they want a government that works. And it's pretty obvious that whether it's funding the operation of the government, building roads and bridges, creating jobs, defending the nation in this case, that we have a dysfunctional government that just doesn't work. You know, I saw Mike Lee, I think that's the individual on the shows yesterday morning, very cavalier. Well, you know, if this national security law, sunsets on Sunday night, no big deal. Maybe we'll get it done by Wednesday. You know, that's a pretty cavalier attitude to have when you're talking about keeping this country safe, national security.
You went into what I call a should-be argument. It should be this, it should be that. And the reason that it isn't this or it isn't that is because there's an agreement within a party to go along with these unwritten rules and shut everything down. Why is that going on is the question.
Well, you know, I don't know why it's going on, but Americans said they wanted a change in the Congress. They wanted things to move forward. They wanted things to get done. The Republicans said that when they took over the Senate, that the Senate was going to work. You know, they're still working 3 days a week. They travel back to their home districts on back to their districts on Friday. They come back on Monday. So they're working 3 day weeks. They made this big deal about working a rare Sunday session. You know, if working Americans worked the way the people in Congress worked, they'd all be fired. And that's what ought to happen in Washington. All the obstructionists, all those people that don't want to do the work of the people, need to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Well, Ken, why are you here?
Well, Ken is gone. That sounds like
so. Ken, are you still there? We've lost Ken. He said his piece, and he's gone.
He's gone. Well, he got his he vented his spleen, and now we're here picking up the pieces.
So Augie, in your case, would you mind having the government be able to have access to your emails? Would that bother you?
I don't want it formally them picking it up. No, I think if they know they can go to the server that I happen to use, fine. Let them warrant it and go there. I don't want them. No, I don't want that.
Okay, let's ask a different question. Yeah. And this is a similar question about federal databases. Right now in Cleveland, they're finally using rape kits that were collected by the government, in the government of Cleveland in this case, that go back sometimes 15 years ago. And the rape kits are testing them for DNA. And not just Cleveland, this is about a dozen different cities in the United States, because it costs between $500 and $1,500 to process a rape kit for DNA to see if they can find out who may have raped an individual.
And or that they've got the wrong person in jail.
Or they had the wrong person in jail. And both things happen. But what they have found out, they weren't finding the wrong person in jail in these cases that happened just recently. They were finding instead that they had serial rapists that were committing a huge portion of these rapes over and over and over again. And because Cleveland and other different municipalities were not using their databases, we're not testing, because it costs money. It may have cost $500 to find out who assaulted this woman. It may have cost $1,500 in our county to find. It's absurd. They let this stuff languish in storage.
Well, the point of, I think the real point of your idea that this is not being done is that when they find out that somebody has spent 30 years in prison and they didn't commit the rape to begin with, it ends up costing them millions of dollars automatic just for one situation. So, and in the case of Chicago, they spent $500 million in settlements in Chicago. A guy by the name of Berg, Captain Berg, tortured people and got confessions and jailed a whole bunch of people, some on death row and so forth. They ended up being pardoned. They now have basically a no-fault. You don't go to, there's no death penalty in Illinois because the governor said no to that, who ended up going to jail for another issue. But the point is, you have a situation where incompetent police, which are rampant through this country, there is no standard for what real standard for what it means to become a police officer, and you might have a form or a standard here and there that might seem to work, but do they really carry out the role of calling for good police, or do they really, are they more interested in hiring cronies? And when you have that situation, along with this kind of handling of rape cases and all the other things that people worry about the government doing, this is a representative of our government, is it, who is there to protect you on the street against crime. And when you find out in city after city after city, they do the opposite. Police force after police force, and now all of the police heads of chief of police and sheriffs and so forth are nervous as hell that what bomb is going to go off in their jurisdiction and is going to embarrass the hell of them. Down in Sarasota, a passenger who ended up dying in the hospital. The stuff is happening in this locality.
There were two cases in this locality in the past year. But
well, this just happened 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And so this is continuing now, and the embarrassment, the mud on your face is showing up, Floyd. So with all of the things we have at hand to find ways to arrest people, we have very little effort in correcting the people who do the arresting. Mm. When you don't have the CIA, when you cited yourself that the CIA had the information about the guys that did 9/11, and the FBI had it, and the Justice Department had it,
and they didn't work together.
And you go to your doctor's office, and you got health care. And I've gone to this one doctor who I'd had a colonoscopy with. He's now retired, but he would bitch like hell about the paperwork he had to do for Medicare and stuff like that. And then the government was a big problem, big bad government always, this nonsense. And I said, so let me understand something. I'm having this colonoscopy today. I did all my paperwork and I came into your first office. And now you have a surgery office where you put people under anesthesia. I come in and do it all over again. Yeah. This is within your own office. You can't conduct an efficient operation. And you say, point to the big bad government, and it's true, the big bad government doesn't do that either.
And part of the Affordable Care Act is to have this centralized, the state is centralized.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing. Now, your colonoscopy is now on file in Utah. They have a record of every little inch of that. Isn't it kind of nice to know they have pictures of your backside in Utah?
Well,
anyway,
you know,
but going back
the,
to
all the talent is the big old tube.
Anyway, so what we have is we have the NSA wanting to collect data on her emails and her phone calls. And how about this DNA? If you share the database of the DNA, and this wasn't done for many years, and it's just starting to be shared, of rapists who may go from one city to the second city.
You have the Innocence Project, which we probably need to do is get someone who represents that group to come on, because that's what they deal with. And they look to incarceration, which is another issue. We over-incarcerate, we over-arrest, and we overuse the prison system. And why do we do that? We privatize half our city.
But going back to the topic we're on, as far as sharing
motivation for the incarceration, and then the screw-ups that happen by the incompetent people who won't use an efficient system, or if they do have it, they will not use it effectively.
So here's the situation people may have an opinion on. I don't mind having the government have my fingerprints in order to get certain jobs. I worked for a government agency, and they had to take my fingerprints. I don't mind having those. Caller, I'll be with you in a second. So stay there. I don't mind having the government have access to my fingerprints. And the DNA as well. Let's talk about this. Caller, we're going to take a gamble and put you on the air.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. It's Nick in St. Petersburg.
Hey, how you doing? Good morning, Nick. What's up?
Well, Ken prompted my call. I can't believe Ken, of all people, has been drinking the Kool-Aid. talking about, you know, we need, you know, what does it matter if this expires? Listen, do you think the NSA has changed their behavior since midnight last night?
Oh, hell no.
Hell no.
No.
You know, we have the right to security and privacy of our papers in person, right? I mean, that's in the Constitution. No. They have to have just cause, and even when they take it to the FISA court, there's nobody there other than criminal judges to say, yeah, go for it, right?
Well, if they're not criminal, they're questionable, for
and
sure.
And the FISA court is almost a rubber stamp. They approve something like 80-90% of all the things. I think it's higher than 90%.
But, your point, though, is a good one. And that's that. The thing is a bit of a joke. The Patriot Act, the documents for the Patriot Act, were on the shelf of the Congress before 9/11.
Now, exactly.
They've been trying to jam this down the public's throat forever. So,
right.
And I really think it had nothing to do with protecting us therein after that.
It's Augie, right?
It's Augie, right.
And I wish I could listen to your station in St. P. For some reason, I haven't been able to get your signal.
You can go online to themorningmatch.com.
So I was listening online this morning. That's what prompted the call. I lost my train of thought. Hey, guys, great show. I'm glad you have it. And thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Yeah. So back to the DNA. They're just starting to coordinate this nationally. But it's a crime that the jurisdictions of Cleveland and numerous other different cities were not processing these rape kits because it costs money to bring these people to jail. They will spend tens of thousands of dollars for other different things, for equipment and stuff like that, but not to prevent future rapes. And the fact is, numerous articles in the past week have shown that some of these rapists were committing 30% of all the rapes. Now, you have dormitory rapes in colleges, you have rapes from people, date rapes and different things. But that 30% figure is pretty large, where a person's raping one person after the other, after the other, after the other, and it could have been stopped if only they tested for the DNA.
You know,
and again, whether it's our emails or our DNA, are we safer or less safe having the government have access to those?
How do you find people? And the DNA is a way to determine who people are, in fact, because it's just the sex trafficking thing alone. We get 300,000 kids disappear a year, and they're white. They're not out of South America. They're not out of black families and so forth. They're white, male and female. They used to be on your milk cartons in those days when you got milk cartons. They advertise this kid's missing. What are we going to do? And then you have this, I can't think of the guy's name. He's called John somebody or other, whose kid was murdered and raped and lost his head and so forth. All this awful stuff. But when you have an incompetent police force locally, and a questionable management of policing nationally. How in the world do we expect to say, well, you've got all this DNA evidence and they're not using it right?
They're not using it. They were not using it at all. They were putting it in, they were collecting the data samples, and they were putting it in storage for 15 years.
Well, but that's the point I'm making. When you see this incompetent use or non-use, as the case may be, whichever, turning their back on information to do their job. It's about not doing the job that you're paid to do and elected to do, as the case may be. And then you have a Congress, when a representative goes to Congress and he says, I'm going to change this. I'm going to change the sex trafficking thing. We're going to find out who these kids are through DNA. We don't care if they bleach their hair. We don't care if they shave their eyebrows. We don't care if they change their documents, they steal their cell phone, rape them, whatever, and keep them corralled 11 years old to 15 years old, which is going on all over the state of Florida, all over the country, and Florida is one of the main agents for white children being sold online, and DNA is one avenue to find out who's doing it. But the reason the issue doesn't, and a John's Law does not come into effect for one thing, along with DNA, John's Law often will capture the politicians and the bigwigs who take part in the sex parties with children. This is the thing that's going. Now we see Dennis Hastert nailed for something he did with the underage person.
Yes.
And so and this keeps popping up like ugly bubbles in a cauldron of shit. Pardon my language.
Well, what happened is Florida this past year, just a few months ago, strengthened the John's Law. So now they're going to go after people who frequent prostitutes and prosecute them with more severe penalties.
Well, that finally happened. If you don't prosecute the use of a child through a pimp and through an agency, if you give money, you contract to use that child for sex, you should be prosecuted the same way as if you raped a neighbor kid who's underage.
And it's not being done. They're trying to do that now. But again, as far as collecting the DNA, the question is, in the last few moments, I don't mind if the government has my DNA. I don't mind if they have my fingerprints. I don't mind if they have my emails or my telephone records. If it can make my daughter safer, if it can make my wife safer or my sister safer by having DNA samples, so if someone rapes somebody, they're going to have the DNA and they can say, this person is the person who did that. I think it would make my family, the females in my family.
In D.C., in a very exclusive neighborhood, just recently, a month or so ago, a family was murdered. Now, the DNA was shown on a coffee cup sitting outside the house. The house was set on fire. The guy escaped and went to New York. And then he was brought back, and they're saying he's the only one, or someone said he's the only one who was involved in this killing. He killed an 11-year-old boy, killed a sister, killed a mother and a father, and they extorted $40,000 from delivery from one of the employees of the father. And they brought it to the house. Now they're thinking that the guy that did that was in on the killing and in on the money taking, the ransom for these people who ended up being murdered. And the DNA on the cup of the guy who had a record was the issue. And now they're not sure that's right. So they can give you a cup of coffee as you're being interrogated, and you're the suspect, and to put they get your DNA from handling that cup. It's so easy to frame people at the same time.
And yes, that's a possibility. But when we're talking about something like rape,
when you want a conviction,
when they're talking something about rape, it's kind of hard to reach in there and grab my semen and simply say, this,
you know, your semen. They just need the sweat off your hand, not your.
Well, whatever it may be, at the same particular situation.
They want a conviction more than they want really solving the problem. Then they'll get that.
But for rapes,
hard to get that.
For rapes, you're going to need two things. You're going to need the DNA, and you're going to need to have the person who was raped testify against you. So we have the person, and in almost every situation, these women are alive. Now they have to go back to court. They have
to.
You
don't need to be a witness. No. Underage children, the statutory rape there, in that case, underage boys or girls, you don't need to be a witness against the one doing it. All you need is proof through some other way.
But in each of these cases, these were adult women. Now they've got over the ordeal of the rape. Now they're going to come back in 5, 6, 7 years later, and after they've put their lives back together, they've got to relive the whole thing and testify against this person, say, yes, this...
Well, those are the grim realities, the miserable, crappy policing that goes on, we call...
Well, this wasn't even policing. These were the bureaucrats of the city of Cleveland who decided they could save money by not providing to the police the results of the DNA evidence. Yeah, so we're blaming the wrong people here.
I don't know that we are. I think Cleveland, they had, in Cleveland years ago, the move thing, they bombed a house and burned down an entire block in an effort to get at the
problem. That was Philadelphia.
Well, maybe,
Philadelphia.
They did a similar thing in Cleveland.
Yeah, they did. Look.
But the point is, you're right. You have a situation where you're not going to get an effective policing until there's real reform, and it's got to start in the Congress. If your Congress isn't going to do the job because a party decides government's too big because they don't understand it, but don't touch my Medicare or my Social Security. Oh, and by the way, it's all right if you incarcerate 60% of one group of people in our prison system, and we pay for it through our tax, but that's all right too. We don't give a damn. I think that's the problem. People have to care, and when they say voting doesn't matter, my vote doesn't count, it really doesn't count depending on which party you're going to vote for. I don't believe in parties. I believe in open primaries. But in the mess we're in, we don't have a parliamentary system. We can't vote out a party and get it on a leader that way. In the parliamentary systems, the party decides who the leader is, and he becomes your, unquote, president, whether it's England or Germany or France, whatever. So these are the countries that have a parliamentary system. I think we probably should go that way, frankly.
And it's not going to happen, but it is...
Well, I don't know.
It is nice in England.
If we have a choice between revolution or changing the system, a congressional convention, maybe people will think along those. California right now is going to open primaries. They actually are. And that's going to be a model. It's 36 million people there. They're going to make a case for this country. And what happens in California often spreads to the rest of the country. So they're looking at a system of change. New York's about to do the same thing. They're going to have open primaries in New York. They're getting rid of the Electoral College in California and New York. That's about almost 60 million people. Not 60 million, about 55 million people. But you have change within the states. Are states really good laboratories? You got southern states and you got northern states. In the southern states, the plantation still works.
Well, what I'd like to do is thank Pat and Nick and Ken for their calls.
Thank you guys.
And each of those. And we want to thank you for listening to The Morning Edge. We'll be back on Wednesday. And this concludes our show.
I crashed your party Saturday. I said I'm